Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty. We're going to be talking about soil and plant micronutrient issues. It will be interesting. There's a lot of stuff going on there that doesn't necessarily revolve around N, P, and K. We're going to talk about some of those other nutrients that do show up on soil tests, do show up on plant tissue tests, and definitely do make a difference in our yields and our quality in our crops. We'll also be taking your calls and questions today at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, or Darren Hefty. So to start the day off today, Brian, you're traveling. I just got back from doing some traveling. What are you learning today?
Yeah, so I was in Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada today. Just did an Ag PhD soils clinic. I love doing the soils clinics. It's so much fun because quite often there are a lot of the things we talk about that people either haven't heard much of before or they just want to learn a lot more about now. And the big thing is just how do you invest your fertilizer dollars? So the point is, like with today, okay, we're going to talk about micronutrients. Are they the most important part of a soil fertility program? No, we don't need hundreds of pounds of those like we might with N, P, or K. But with micronutrients, if you're missing them, then number one, your N, P, and K aren't going to get used as effectively. And number two, they could be your yield limiting factor. So look at any of those micronutrients, whether it's manganese or copper, boron, zinc, iron, possibly even molybdenum. I mean, there are so many different micronutrients. You got to understand they're important. You need to test for them. And if you need some, if you're short on them, you got to apply them. They don't cost much money.
You know, one of the things that's tough, Brian, is a lot of farmers will look at research that they'll find all over, whether it's private research or from universities or just neighbors that are doing some side-by-sides or whatnot. And sometimes we see, well, hey, there's a university that did a trial. They added boron. They didn't see a yield gain. So boron must not gain us yield.
Well, yeah, but that was that one spot in that one field, that one year, the boron wasn't the yield-limiting factor, and it might not have been. And also, maybe it still was. The boron just didn't get applied in the right way. It didn't get into the plant. You know, there are a lot of these things, too, where we say, well, I applied it. It should get into the plant. Not necessarily. Did you plant tissue test before and after? If you didn't, then how do you know it got into the plant? There are many different forms of fertilizer that either break down over a long period of time or might be available under certain soil or plant conditions. So, I mean, you got to look at everything. And our job as farmers and as agronomists is to figure out what are the yield limiting factors? How do I get those fixed and continue to increase my yields? I don't mind spending money, but it's got to be spending money on something that's making money. So net, it's got to give me a good gain.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Determining what the yield limiting factor is and then addressing it, that's the challenge if you don't know how to read a soil test. And so I think it's awesome. I agree with you. Doing these soils clinics is a lot of fun and generates a lot of discussion. What was really interesting for the growers up around Lethbridge? Were there some things that you talked about that they said, wait a second, go over that again? Haven't heard that before.
Well, I don't know that there's going to be anything that is totally brand new. For one, a lot of people do listen to us on the radio and they're following many of the things that we're doing. But I did have one question right toward the end of the day about irrigation water because we were going through a soil test that was high in pH. The farmer said, well, my irrigation water is probably mid-8s. What do I do? And I said, you have three choices. Number one, either you stop using water altogether, which you're not going to want to do. So choice number two is, can you get a better water source? Can you dig deeper, for example, and get a better water source? I don't know. You'd have to check. And number three, if you can't do either of those first two things, well, then you've got to treat the water. And I said, I'm no expert in that, but talk to the irrigation companies and talk about water treatments because there are farmers we work with around the world that are treating their water before they're irrigating with it because it only makes sense. If you're going to throw out high salt or high sodium or high pH water, that over time, that's how your soil is going to end up too. So it's just like for human beings. If we continue to eat junk, well, chances are we're not going to have a great figure after a few years, you know? So it's all what you put into it. And if you're putting bad water in, you're probably going to get bad soil and bad crop in the end.
You know, the water quality thing has been a big issue almost everywhere we've gone this winter. And a lot of growers are looking at it, whether it's irrigation water or the water that they're going to run through their sprayers as they're applying products. This can really impact how you get things into the plant and what issues end up building up in your soil. And, you know, in that part of Canada, Brian, is drainage the big concern there with growers? Is heavy soil and just how expensive it is to move the needle?
Because you're in a super dry area. I mean, they're going to get 15 inches of rain on average, and they have medium to heavy soils. So, no, I mean, it's not that big an issue, but by the same token, what I talked to these guys about, because I did spend some time on tile, is how about spots? Do you have a few alkali spots? Well, sure I do. Okay. Well, that's where you want to put the money. I said, I could show you the tile maps off our farm. Yeah, I got some flat ground where we pattern tile. But we have a whole bunch that's rolling. And then we're just going to fix those areas with the tile in those spots. And then I also got questions today about, okay, well, how about eroded hilltops? What do I do there? Well, you got to try to build new topsoil, build the organic matter there. And that can be done, but you're going to have to reduce tillage. You want to plant crops with lots of roots, use manure or compost, use cover crops if that fits in your rotation, and then use some biologicals. So whatever the issue is, it can be managed, and there are so many things that are within our control. But that's another thing that I said today to everybody is, we very often get caught up in all the things we can't control, whether it's the weather or the markets or, you know, your neighbor. I mean, let's talk about things that are going to make money on our farm right now. So spend our time wisely and invest it in your crop and making your farm better.
Certainly a lot of things that you are in control of, and that's what we like to talk about on the Ag PhD radio show. What can you control to increase your yields and get a better return on your investment on the farm? We're going to get into some soil and micronutrient issues today. We're also going to take your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Tired of that old warped poly boom ruining your spray applications? Express Boom from Hypro is a fully assembled stainless steel boom that ensures an even application of chemicals every time. Don't wait another season. Upgrade today. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're glad you joined us today. We're going to be talking about some soil and micronutrient issues and what you can do to fix them on your farm and how to find them as well. We'll also be taking your calls and questions at 844 44AgPhD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We've been getting some soil tests in the last few days, as we pretty much do year-round here at AgPhD. And it's interesting because there are a lot of things on there just looking at the soil tests that Brandon and I come up with questions right away of, oh, I wonder what they're doing to address the zinc, or I wonder what they're doing to address the phosphorus issue in this soil. And so I'm really excited here because we're going to start the show off with one of our favorite guests. We've got Rob Dedman, is a fantastic crop consultant down in the state of Arkansas, and talks to growers all over the country because they know he can help them solve problems. So, Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Darren. It's always my pleasure.
We're talking about soil and micronutrient issues today, and I hear a lot of guys, when I ask what their micronutrient plan is, they say, well, I'm going to put a quart of zinc in furrow on my corn. And I say, yep, and what else? And that's pretty much where it stops. Is zinc the only one that matters, or are you finding a lot of other micros with the farmers you're working with that are moving the needle for them?
You know, I think in a lot of farmers, zinc may be the only one that matters, but it's really the one that catches our eye the most. But, you know, we've got to pay attention to all these micros. We've got to, especially in corn, you know, we need to definitely be, I think we're overlooking sulfur. I think sulfur is something that, especially in the South, we may not be applying quite enough. I believe we can get some better nitrogen utilization maybe if we increase the amount of sulfur that we're using. It seems like over the years, as we've cleaned up our environment and we've cleaned up our air, and you know, and acid rain is not as common as it used to be, you know, back in the day, we have seen this trend of soil test sulfur levels steadily decrease. So we've definitely got to be watching sulfur, not only our zinc, but our sulfur.
I agree with you. I think a lot of guys are starting to put a little bit on, but it's amazing to me that we're still running short. And when we do put a little bit on, it does help. You're right, with nitrogen and other things. You know, when you're looking at soil tests, is that where you start with the growers that you're working with? Look at the soil tests and try and figure out where the problem areas might be?
Yeah, you know, and look at the trends. And not just look at this year's soil test, but I want to look at the trends. Where were we at last year? Where were we at the year before? Are we trending up? Are we trending down? You know, if we put 30 units of sulfur in this corn crop, do we have enough to get through this bean crop without making an elemental sulfur application, you know? So I think definitely start with the soil sample. Be aware of your trends. One soil sample is great. Multiple soil samples is even better.
You know, when we talk about these kinds of issues, sometimes somebody will make a comment about, well, I put this on with my irrigation, or I put this on and then I irrigated. And I get comments from dryland farmers saying, okay, what about for me? What about for the dryland farmer? Is it all figure it out and kind of plan for the next crop, or do in-crop applications help even the dryland farmer?
You know, I think in-crop applications will help even the dryland farmer. From the work that we've done with you guys up there on the bean plots and everything, that's a dryland environment. And I have found we have had great success with moving the needle on nutrient applications, especially, you know, I'm a big fan of the Y drops up there. And where I've Y dropped nutrients close to that root zone on young plants, we've been able to move that needle. So, yeah, I think that we can definitely do in-crop applications on the dryland farmer and just make sure we get the right product and get it out there at the right time. You know, so that's key. And you know, a lot of times try to get those in front of a rainfall. And that's not always the easiest thing to do, but always have a goal.
Yeah, I think you're right. The sooner we can get the nutrients out there, it's going to rain eventually, and it's going to move things in. And the sooner you get the problem addressed, the better off you're going to be down the road. Many growers this year, for a couple different reasons, one early frost and another one just a lot of fall rains, didn't get their fall fertility program on and are going to have to switch up to something in the spring. When you've gotten behind the eight ball like that and you've got no fertility out there at all yet, do you try and do a lot of stuff with the planter, or do you think you can still be effective with the broadcast application in the spring?
You know, I think with the right products, we're going to be effective in the spring. That's what we're going to do. I don't think it's just the north or the Midwest that's got those issues of the fall rains, it's this entire farming region of the U.S. We've had probably the wettest fall I can ever remember in my career. But definitely think that, you know, we're going to probably do a little bit with the planter. We're going to do a lot broadcast. We're going to, as we begin to get this ground ready to go, we're going to be putting a lot of dry fertilizer out with sulfur, with nitrogen, with micronutrients in it. And then we're going to be pulling that up into the beds and getting that ready to go. So, yeah, I think we're going to have to definitely look at some broadcasts just because, number one, quite a bit of this ground's going to have to be worked that got rutted up last year. You know, I don't know how in a lot of areas we can't help but do a lot of conventional style tillage, especially in the Delta region from the Boot Hill, Missouri to the Mississippi Delta down in here. We rutted this ground last fall as bad as it's ever been rutted. So that ground's all got to be worked. Put the fertility out there, work it in, it's going to be good to go.
You know, I think we've got that same opportunity in the north too, Rob, where there were a lot of ruts created trying to get the harvest out. And so, yeah, we do have to do some tillage. So it would be an opportunity to broadcast some fertilizer out there if that was the plan and get it worked into the ground. One other thing that I've talked to quite a few growers about this winter that they didn't get lime on, and they were wondering about, what do you do about that? If you've got a low pH, you need to make an adjustment. Or on the other side, you got a high pH, you need to make an adjustment, and you've got to do that in the spring. Do you see any issues with that?
It's not my favorite, you know, but we'll get a little effect. You know, if it's a really bad issue, we can band-aid the problem through this year using pelletized lime. I mean, it's the quick lime. It's definitely going to be a way to band-aid ourselves through this problem. But there again, I'm in the same boat as a lot of these other growers with my customers. We didn't get anything done in the fall. We have got manures that have got to be put out. We have got, usually we put the manures out in the fall. We're depending on the nitrogen in the manures to help get stubble breakdown through the winter. So it's, you know, we're all behind the eight ball with this. So I definitely think we got to do what we got to do and be sure to look for those band-aids if we have to use them, like the pell lime.
Hey, you know, one thing we're going to catch up to you on, Rob, you guys have been talking about poultry litter getting spread on fields and really liking that. We're doing that for the first time this year. We got some done this fall. What do we need to know about that to be successful?
Just be sure and be aware of the availability of each one of the nutrients. Just because it's a manure doesn't mean that everything's 100% available. So that would be my key. Be aware of what you got.
Okay, so we've run a test, and probably don't count on that to be 100% accurate, is what you're saying. That we may need to have a little plan B as well.
Well, not necessarily 100% accurate, but not 100% available. Especially the nitrogen in poultry manure. You know, I only feel like about 50% of it's available the first year. So we've got to be sure in our heads to know that, okay, if it says it, you know, if that test comes back a 70 pounds of N per ton, that really we're only going to see about 35 of that first year, you
gotcha.
Know, and be willing to float a little bit there. You're going to have a little bit of float room.
Okay. Okay, well, that's fair enough. Fortunately, my brother that I farm with is addicted to nitrogen, and he loves putting that out. So getting him to put a little extra N out just to be safe is no problem, Rob. He can always find some room for that in his budget anyway. I've been talking with Rob Dedman, crop consultant down in Arkansas. Rob, thank you so much. Really appreciate you sharing with us today.
Sure, anytime.
If you were at the Ag PhD Field Day last summer, you saw Rob and his team managing a plot of soybeans. They ended up having the highest yield on the farm and got very close to a state record yield. It's really impressive what they're doing, raising 100-plus bushel soybeans down in Arkansas and beyond. We're talking about soil and micronutrient issues on today's program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mm. No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Talking about soil and plant micronutrient issues on today's program and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Real happy to have Paul Borges with us. He's a consultant in California. Paul, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing well. Okay, so I was on a plane last night, and I was sitting by somebody just coming back from San Jose, California. And I said, well, what was it like out there? And he's like, coming back to 5 degrees at home here. I just want to go back to California. So is it pretty nice out there right now, Paul? You got a lot of stuff going on?
We have actually a pretty nice little cold snap here. We had snow elevations down to about 1,000 feet. And we've had a lot of rain the last couple of days. And today is it was cool this morning, but we got nice sunshine right now as all the almond trees are starting to wake up here. So we're getting ready to go.
You know, okay, so talk about that, because I don't get to work with tree crops where I'm at. Tell me a little bit about that. As you say, the almond trees are starting to wake up, so spring starting to be here. What do you do for management in terms of nutrients with almond trees, and when do you start looking?
Like right now, we're looking at bud swell and timing out of when to put out nitrogen with this bud swell coming up, and then we'll be spraying foliar sprays protecting the flowers for, depending on the weather, kind of weather, if it's foggy or rainy, we'll protect the flowers. And then we'll start spraying some foliars with a little bit of everything, kind of have a broad coverage of nutrients.
You know, one of the things that we look at a lot is micronutrients here in our row crops. What micronutrients are really important on a crop like almonds?
Some of the bigger ones, you know, we like to have a decent boron level in them for good flowers and healthy pollination. And manganese would be the second, probably. Then you got manganese in there for helping with for set. And copper, being a nice fungicide, but copper at that time is very important too. Like to have copper levels, and then of course zinc. So when we start flowering here, as soon as we start getting green tissue, you'll see a lot of the guys will go to a broad spectrum foliar spray with whatever they're spraying to cover all those, all five or six different nutrients. Sometimes even more. They'll have potassium, nitrogen, and phosphate in them, just depending on what we've seen from the soil samples, what we need to address that's short. It's how we give them a little spoon feeding.
Yeah, especially on a crop like that, I mean, it's a high-dollar crop. You want to make sure you're doing the right things, and then you're also in a perennial situation here where it's important that you build things up for the long term. Do you see a lot of change on a year-to-year basis, or is it kind of like with row crops, you get the soils up to a certain level and you just try and maintain that if you want to keep production going well?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Try to keep production well and pushing, you know, it's always like everything else. You find what's missing the most and work on that and balancing the soil. And then there's certain things we'll work on, like boron, zinc, real important at this stage for the flowering.
Sure. Sure. All right. So you work with a lot of crops. I'm sorry, I dig into almonds deeper and there's just tons of crops that you got that you're looking at. When you're trying to work with a grower and figure out a micronutrient issue, for example, we've got N, P, and K and sulfur all set and everything's going well with them. We're showing up well in our soil tests and our plant tissue tests, but we're starting to see micros show up. Is there a certain level that you look for in soils just for general crop production that you'd like to see with each micro, or is it a balance? How do you determine if you're short on one?
Well, depending on what the company uses for soil testing, like for Neil Kinsey, you know, we like boron about 1.5% or 1.5 parts per million. Then we like to have manganese close to 100 parts per million. Iron above 200. And copper, depending on the crop, if it's trees, you know, the 5 parts per million is good, but if you're into like strawberries or blackberries or raspberries, closer to 10 because they're being touched so much. And then zinc, of course, we know it depends where the phosphates are at. We keep the zinc numbers close to whatever the phosphate number is in the soil test.
So let's say you've got are you talking, which kind of phosphorus test would you be comparing to? I'm sure you'd see all the Bray tests or Malik tests or Olson tests. Is there one you prefer?
Most of them, we use the Bray and the Olson test quite a bit, especially being with Neil. The Olson test, we use the Olson and the Bray, and then we'll see where the zinc has to match that. For example, if it's the Bray, you know, if we're at 500 pounds, we want to be closer at 19 parts per million in the soil for efficiency on both product, on both elements.
Yep. How do you vary that with Olson? When you've got higher pHs, I know a lot of guys feel the Olson test is a little more accurate. If you're using Olson, would you like to see the zinc stack up to that?
The zinc, I think we want to keep it, you know, close to what we want for the Bray. Neil has talked different, you know, different. I've tried lower, not keeping it lower parts per million, but I've been pretty satisfied keeping it up at the 19 parts per million, even with Olson or the Bray test.
Okay.
But yeah, you could get away with a little bit less in the Olson test.
You know, a lot of guys talk ratios when they get into zinc and talk about a 10-to-1 ratio with phosphorus, something like that. How does that fit for you? I guess, have you ever done any work like that?
A little bit. Most of the time it's off the pounds. You know, like I said, for example, if we wanted to be at 500 pounds of phosphate in the soil, then I try to get my zinc as close as I can to about 19 to 20 parts per million. And depending where it's at and how much phosphate we're adding to the soil, will determine how many pounds of zinc I add to it.
Interesting. Okay, so speak about that then with micronutrient applications. Do you find there being a best time of year to apply them or a best way to apply micros?
For example, for doing like a row crop, if we could do it pre-plant, we'll go out and we'll sprinkle the fertilizer just over the 40-inch beds and incorporate it that way, then plant the crop into it. And that's when we'll add 1152, some phosphate, little P, little K, and then miners, depending on what it's missing and what crop's going to go on top, then I'll adjust the rest of the miners to fit that growing season. Fits in trees, we do a lot of post-harvest. And then depending on the irrigation system, we'll do it in season. If they have a micro or flood, if it's drip, then we do a lot of spoon feeding through the drip hoses. And then in the fall, we'll apply the bulk of the dry nutrients to the ground at that time and let the rains incorporate it in.
You mentioned that you've been getting a lot of rain lately. Are you in a pretty good situation for moisture? And what's the irrigation situation looking like for this coming season?
So far, so good. We're at good levels, and we got a lot of snow out of this last big storm here. So I think we'll be okay this year. Now we just got to see how much more Mother Nature is going to give us in the next couple of weeks, because it always happens when the trees start to bloom, we get the rain. So we'll see what we get now.
Yeah. Well, good luck. We've been talking with Paul Borges with B&B Consulting in California. Paul, thank you so much. Really appreciate you sharing a little about the strategy going into tree crops and other crops as well.
All right. You guys have a good one.
Yep, you too. That's good to hear. They're in a decent situation for water in California, at least at this point in the season. That could be a challenge. You know, a lot of growers where we farm are dryland farmers, and we think, oh, it'd be so wonderful to have irrigation and those resources. But when you just don't have the water, that can be a challenge too, to be able to get things done. We're talking about soil and plant micronutrient issues. We're also taking calls and questions today at 844-44-AG-PHD. We're going to get to those phone lines here right after this short break coming up. If you've got a question for us, please call in. Otherwise, you can send us an email too. radio@agphd.com is a great way to get a hold of us. And if you've got a soil test, it works pretty good when we can have that right in front of us and run through what some of those levels are so we can try and make those correlations like you heard Paul talking about. All right, if I'm going to worry about zinc, I really need to focus on what I've got for phosphorus levels because those two nutrients can fight against each other a little bit. Again, we're talking soil and plant micronutrient issues on today's Ag PhD radio show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. Been discussing soil and plant micronutrient issues, but we're taking your calls and questions as well at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's get to those phone lines. We got Bill with us from Minnesota. Bill, thanks for hanging on there.
Hey, not a problem. Thanks for taking my call.
So what's on your mind today, Bill?
Okay. My wife told me we would never see 200 bushel corn on our farm. All right, so this fall I had spots that were just doing 300.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I know, it was pretty cool. I'm a big farmer, I've got 110 acres.
Okay.
So anyway, there were spots where it just dropped off like crazy, and it's like, man, what's going on? So, all right, did the whole soil test, they grid sampled the whole farm, and it's like, wow, my sulfur, I mean, there's absolutely no sulfur whatsoever out there. It okay. seems like the sulfur levels were just non-existent. So my question is, how much AMS do I need to put down to get 40 pounds of sulfur? I
200 mean, pounds.
Take me 40 pounds of sulfur. So 200 pounds of AMS.
Yep, 200 right, pounds now, AMS the acre.
I was just listening to your segment before about pH. Now, my pHs are, I think the low end is 5.3, and then it, moves up, and the worst is 7.9 or something like that. So, but, so that's a lot of lime, and I don't know, then
and variable rate lime, just in those
well, yeah,
certain zones.
Absolutely.
Where did you see the yield drop off? Was it in the low pH spots or was it in the high pH spots?
The high pH spots weren't so bad, but the low pH was terrible.
Okay.
And so, obviously we didn't get a lot of stuff done this fall because of the weather. So we were kind of SOL there.
Yeah, we're in the same boat as you, Bill. We didn't get a whole lot of work done in the fall either.
Right. Normally we get about 7,500 gallons of pig manure.
Okay.
And that never happened. So, okay, we had, I had 300 pounds of potash put down before I did any fall tillage because I knew from prior soil tests that, we were short. So
sure.
We did that. Now, okay, this spring what my plan is, we're going to put 6216 in a 2x2, 5 gallons, and then I want to do 5 gallons, I think it's a Sure K.
Sure.
I was talking with the agro liquid guys, and they said something about that in furrow.
Okay.
So, and then, well, like the guy that did my soil sampling and soil testing, I told him, I want a complete soil test. And so he's going, well, wow, nobody does that. And I'm like, well, I want that. So it was just kind of crazy, when the soil test came back and he's going, well, geez, guys, we don't normally put sulfur down or, It's like, well, I haul a lot of fertilizer for one of our local co-ops, and in the fall, there's a lot of guys putting sulfur down. So anyway, I think sulfur is a big deal.
Totally agree with you. It's really catching on. I know in the state of Minnesota, there were a lot of guys, I agree with you, that weren't doing it, and now we're even seeing some guys doing it on soybeans and having really nice yield gains. So, yeah, I'm all for the sulfur, and you do a couple hundred pounds of ammonium sulfate. That takes care of 40 pounds of your nitrogen for the year, too. So if you're going to put, say, a couple hundred pounds of N out, there's part of that, too.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for taking my question. That answers a lot.
Yeah, I like your Sure K. I'm fine with that in furrow. I use that product too.
Yeah.
Putting some other fertilizer over in a 2x2 is fine. You know, that pH, if you could address that with lime sooner rather than later, that would be good because it's just going to keep hurting you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we plan on now this coming fall to do, you know, a bunch of lime, but is there something I can do this spring?
Well, you could
try and get that pH adjusted.
You could still put lime out in the spring. You could do.
I hate to send a lime spreader out there in the spring.
No, I hear you.
Because of compaction and all that good stuff.
Especially going into this year, because it looks like we may be wet in the spring. I agree.
Yeah.
You know, you could band pelletize lime. You know, with the row, there's several things that a guy could do, but. You know, for me, I'd try and get it done as soon as you can, and if that means this fall, then so be it. But
it's gonna be a
challenge. And then, how many areas of the field were up towards that 7.9? You talked about having
just a couple small. There was one small area that was, you know, at the 7.9. I've got 140, a 40-acre piece that's my good piece, and that's where the 7.9 was, but the majority of it is middle, you know, 6.3 to 6.6. So that's, you know, just about perfect.
Yes.
But, you know, there's probably 4 acres in there that's getting up there, you know, and so.
Yep. But, yeah, if it's not too bad an area, too big an area, is it a drainage issue by any chance? Is it a low spot or?
It's no, actually, it's the field is pretty much level, and it's all pattern tiled.
Okay.
So I wouldn't think that would be the issue.
Yeah. If you've got good tile in there, you don't see water standing, you know, a day or two after a rain, you should be in good shape.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the call, Bill. We really appreciate it. And if you ever ever want us to look at the soil tests or anything like that, you can sure send them to us as well.
Yeah, I plan on doing that one day. So
awesome.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thanks
well, good luck this spring.
Yep. You too. Bye.
Yeah, Bill hit on a problem that we were talking about with Rob Deadman down in Arkansas, too. A lot of fall work just didn't get done this year due to weather, and in most cases it was too wet, which is certainly going to impact us going into next spring as well. Let's jump into the Ag PhD mailbag here, Janelle.
It's the mailbag!
Got a comment from Charles. We were talking about ethanol on the show, and he happened to catch that. And he said, I just wanted to know I'm from Paraguay, and my car is running with 100% ethanol. Wow, Charles, that's awesome. I wish I could run on 100% ethanol in my vehicle. That would be great to have that option. I love ethanol for so many reasons. And when we look at where we're at with corn supplies and those kinds of things, it's certainly something that I wish we'd get more consideration of, but thanks for your comments on that. Really appreciate that, Charles. Get a question from George in South Texas. He said, I heard you guys talking about using gibberellic acid on your corn to make it taller. We plant so early down here, our corn wants to stay short. I forgot what stage you said that you could put gibberellic acid on corn to increase the height. Hey, George, thanks for the question. And I don't know what cold means in South Texas, but I know what cold means where we farm. Cold means really cold and just barely above freezing. And we see gibberellic acid giving a really nice response when we have daytime highs in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and we've got active growth with grasses. Once you're above 70 degrees, your plants are producing quite a bit of their own gibberellic acid and increasing height on their own, increasing elongation between the nodes. So we're looking at when it's cooler, when it's less than 70 degrees, that's when you can get a boost with gibberellic acid, whether it's on corn or pasture grass or anything like that. Any other comments you've got on gibberellic acid, Brian, on corn?
Well, just that you could also use it in pasture ground. A lot of people will talk about silage, but they kind of forget about pasture. You know, the more grass you produce, the better off you are. So you can use it in the spring, or you can use it in the fall when temperatures are cooler.
All right. Thanks for the question, George. We really appreciate that. We got a question about bioreactors from Peter. He said, I wonder if you have any experience with bioreactors fed by a lift station. Well, we sure do.
Well, not specifically fed by a lift station, but we do have a bioreactor on our own farm. And the thing that we found with that is it absolutely, with those wood chips in that. So basically, if you don't know what we're talking about here, you dig a big pit and you put wood chips in there, and then you let water that's coming out of a tile line, for example, run through those wood chips.
And then with the wood chips, they naturally filter out things like nitrogen. So the bacteria in there will need that nitrogen to make protein out of the carbon source or the wood chips. Hey, thanks, Peter, for the question. We'll be right back with more of your questions after this. Stay tuned.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrien herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag, taking your calls and questions for the rest of the show. Our radio mailbag is at radio@agphd.com, or you can give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. Brian, I had to cut you off on the bioreactor. Did you want to talk any more about that? Was there anything else you wanted to share?
Well, just that, yes, we've had experience, and yes, it can take the nitrogen out. But the whole thing is, as a farmer, you've got to figure out how can you have as little nitrogen going off the field or out of the field as possible, because if it's going out of the field, it's lost money. If it's ending up in the wood chips, it's lost money. So we don't want to have to get to that point. We need to look at really focusing on our soils. How much can our soil hold? Take 10 times your CEC, for example. Don't be overdoing it. Use nitrogen stabilizers. Split apply your nitrogen. I mean, there are a lot of different strategies that can be employed, but even if the bioreactor works, which it does, that's not enough for me. I want to do better.
All right. Let's move to the next question here. This one's from Thomas, and he farms in Ohio. He said, I picked up some new ground, and it's going to be a five-year lease with the option to renew. It was fallow last season with a very poor corn crop the year prior. I'm planning on soybeans. Well, planning on corn on corn because soybeans don't seem to stand a chance with our deer densities. Lots of deer, they love to eat the soybeans. Okay, I get that. He said, being my first year on this ground, I'm just curious, what would be a realistic goal on a field where fertility is very poor, phosphorus in the single digits of parts per million, potassium as little as 50 parts per million in a soil with a CEC in the 5 to 10 range, and we've got virtually no nitrogen, sulfur, and other than manganese and iron, we don't have much for nutrients out there.
Where did you say it was from?
Ohio.
That's what I thought. So in Ohio, you get a fair amount of rain, and that's the biggest thing that I would be looking at if I've got terribly depleted soil. I can put a whole bunch of stuff out there, but in dry country, it's hard to get that broken down and into the plant. It's a real challenge.
Yeah, light soils and plenty of rainfall, you can move some nutrients in. And I don't know that I'd, if you're raising, let's just say you're raising 200 bushel corn, Buzz, could you do 200 bushel corn on this? Yes, but it's going to be a little more costly for you because you're really going to have to go after it with nutrients on the soil. So we've got a pH that's in the upper fives, but since the CEC is so light, the buffer pH is about 6.8. So it won't take much for lime to move the needle. I'd be really cautious about over-applying lime. If we could just get that pH up in the 6.3 to 6.5 range, I'd be really happy with that.
I don't even worry about that in year one. I'd just get a little bit of lime out there. Even if it gets to 6 in year one, it might get to 6.3 eventually. So I'm more focused on those nutrients. Yes, I'm with you. You got to use just a little bit of lime. That'll help. But I would really strongly encourage you to do some banding, use some liquid, low salt liquid fertilizer, get something that's going to be available quick because your soil isn't going to deliver it.
Now, I guess the follow-up question, Thomas has got a couple of follow-ups here, and he says, should I focus on N, P, and K the first year, or should I also start applying the micros to try and get that to go? And, you know, we get a lot of these types of questions, Thomas, of where do I start? And the first thing I'm looking at is soil pH, which with just a minor adjustment, just a very low rate of lime, you can start getting that needle to move. But then I'm looking at your N, P, and K, and certainly you're going to need nitrogen for corn, and you're going to have to spoon feed it because you've got light soils. With the phosphorus and the potassium, the real question here, Brian, is it's a five-year lease. Does he worry about if he gets a little too much on this year and starts to build soil levels? I'd say no. I'd go for it.
Yeah, but by the same token, if you go broadcast fertilizer, what we've found in our experience, and it might be different for him, but what we found is it might take 10, 12 years until you recover most of that broadcast fertilizer if it's P and K. So if I'm renting the ground, I don't care if I've got a 3-year, 5-year lease, whatever. I'm still going to ban my fertilizer.
Yeah, I think, you know, here's the other thing. We've talked about this doing a 2x2 on each side of the row, like Randy Doughty has been talking about and Kevin Matthews and a number of growers around the country have said they've had really good luck with that. On light soils that really don't have much fertility, isn't this the ideal spot for that kind of treatment?
Well, you could. You could also strip till, but just somehow, some way, I'm interested in banding. That's the big thing. You know, when we talk about the 2x2 on each side of the row, it's a much bigger deal the higher your yield because the higher your fertilizer requirement is going to be. The more fertilizer you have, the more salt you have, and so it can cause problems. So I kind of come back to, I'm not too worried about both sides of the row. I'm much more worried about, let's band, let's use a low-salt fertilizer, so then we don't have to worry about burning roots off as much.
All right, the other questions that Thomas had is, Should I change my planting population on corn? I've been doing 33,000 on ground I own. Should I maybe cut it to 30,000 or a little bit less?
Absolutely. I would. You know, we're looking at a factor of 10 to 1 on our farm. So if I'm getting, basically, if I'm planting 30,000, I should be getting 300 bushel corn. You know, 10 bushels for every 1,000 is what I'm trying to say. So, you know, if you're talking 180 or 200 bushel corn, your ratio isn't very good there. There's no need to plant more than 30,000 plants per acre, in my mind. Now, you can try stuff, and that's what I tell people all the time. Just try it on your farm and see if it pays or not. But I would seriously doubt that raising planting population is going to pay.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is you may just want to try a couple of different populations out there and just see. I agree with you, though, in the idea that, hey, I've got poor fertility ground. I don't need any more than 30,000, and I'd look for a hybrid that maybe has a little bit of flex to it. That way, in case everything pops for you this year and you can get a little more yield, you got enough flex there to take care of it. Thomas asked about tillage. Should we do some tillage out there to try and make nutrients available faster and pH faster? I agree with Brian's thought that strip till or banded type placement is going to be better for that. With the lime, if you did do some broadcast lime applications, that may be a good idea.
Hold on just a second. I'm going to disagree with you there. If we're looking at short term and I don't care about the long term of the soil, full-scale, all-out tillage will be better in terms of releasing nutrients right away. So I run into guys every year that say, you know what, Brian, I pulled out the mold board plow last year, best yield I've had in a long time. Okay, well, yes, in the short term, it's going to be because you're going to burn up more of the organic matter. So if we're just talking about mining the soil, I'd go full-scale tillage. If we're talking about how do we build it for the long term, that's where we look more at reducing tillage.
Yeah, and I think that's his plan long-term as he wants to get to a reduced tillage situation. But you may look at where that compaction's at out there right now since you got the ground for 5 years and address that up front if there's any issues. Hopefully there's not, but if there are some issues, you may want to take care of that up front too so you can benefit for the next 5 years. And the last question he had was with lime. If he's running deep tillage out there, should he apply more lime on since they made a lime recommendation based on the 6-inch sample? If you don't have a pH test run deeper than that, you just have no idea. Maybe it's low pH underneath there. And maybe doing the tillage might be all you need to adjust your pH. I've got this land for 5 years. At least in a couple of spots, I really like pulling a soil test at 6 to 12 inches, 12 to 18, and 18 to 24 inches down just to see what I'm dealing with out there to find any surprises and get a good idea. We're really only worried about that top 6 inches for the soil pH up front, and especially with what you're doing, farming this maybe for a short period of time. So that's where I'd focus my efforts on. Hey, thanks for the questions. Really appreciate that, and congratulations grabbing a new piece of ground. One last question, Brian. We got about a minute left. Chris down in Texas said, you've been talking about humic acid. I'm wondering how that works or how it could help my yield and when I would use that. Hey, Chris, thanks for the question. A lot of times guys are using humic acid with soil-applied fertility just to get the microbial activity around that fertilizer increased to try and push more into the plant. Do you have a more simplified way to look at this, Brian?
Yeah, it's about as simple as you can possibly get. I would just say we're seeing more benefit to it when we don't have all the soil conditions perfect. So if I've got great drainage, good moisture, great pH, all my nutrients are fantastic, humic acid doesn't seem to pay as much. If you got more challenging ground, it seems like humic pays a little better.
Yeah, and the challenge too with humic acid is there's so much variability from one product to the next, and that's been a real struggle in the industry to make recommendations across the board for humic acids just because, again, one product may look more concentrated, but it may not work as good as the other product. So you have to look for some yield data and see where guys are able to push their yields with it. Thanks for the question. We really appreciate that. Thanks for all the questions that we got today. We're talking about soil and plant micronutrient issues. As always, you can find more information at agphd.com. Thanks for listening today, and be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.